everybody, and welcome back to the I Don't Know Running podcast, where we share our experiences to make running fun and sometimes not so fun. I'm Lewis, and I'm a self-admitted lazy ultra runner.
That threw me off. And I'm Mitch. I thought you were going to have some long spiel just by the way that you kind of started.
Yeah.
And it kind of throws me way off. I'm just Mitch. And I'm here
just Mitch
to be confused.
I'm Terrence with PT Sports Pro. Once again, great to be back on the show.
Yeah, welcome.
Yep. I'm Dave DiPrato as well with PT Sports Pro.
Yeah, awesome. Welcome. Yeah, this is another episode of the I Don't Know Running podcast brought to you by PT Sports Pro. And Correct. We're going to have some fun talking about, it's funny, before we started recording, I was telling you how I love this subject because Mitch doesn't think this applies.
So Mitch is going to be exhibit A.
I think today is just pick on Mitch day.
No, awesome. I think you're all turning on me because I started on Terrence pretty hard when he first got here.
Yeah.
Because I said we could shut the camera off on his side or just make
you
it blurry.
You started on text message 3 days ago.
Maybe. I can't remember.
So, but in today's episode of You Don't Know What You Don't Know, brought to you by PT Sports Pro, we're going to talk about the core. Right, so let's get to the core of the core.
Yeah. What is the core?
So this is interesting because, you know, Mitch is right here and, you know, he has certain ideas of what the core is. And so before we give you our clinical perspective, let's talk about when you think of the core, when you as an athlete think about the core, what are you thinking?
Wrong leg muscles.
lots of miles.
I don't know.
Lots of miles.
I don't know.
You gotta get in those core miles.
The core of your running. I don't know anything about that. I just run. Like, I am a typical runner.
I
do nothing with my core.
Honestly, I think it's all the not the arms, but the core, the stomach,
right.
Back, maybe even some chest. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. Supportive type body muscles.
Now, again, there's no wrong answer because we all have to come from some place.
Is there a right one?
Of perspective, right. But there is a clinical answer.
Okay.
And that's what Dave and I are going to shed some light on.
Awesome.
Today. And then we're going to dive a little bit into some very specific things that we have developed through PT Sports Pro that hopefully will help the audience understand what simple things they can do to maximize their core. So when it comes to the core, you're right. You know, we talk about everything that is central to your trunk. Right. So being anything from your head, neck, your chest, your abdomen and your pelvis, all the muscles that are engaged to controlling that.
Everything, including your shoulders, maybe stuff like that.
Right. So as you move, we talk about central groups of muscles and then peripheral groups of muscles. So if you look at the central groups of muscles, it's all that's anything that's coming right off your spine and then leading to that initial bit of your trunk. Once this gets past the shoulders, past the hips, then we start looking at peripheral muscle groups. And then there's a whole bunch of things we can learn from just that, which I think Mitch is an expert on, especially the legs part.
The leg part.
Legs only.
It's leg day.
Hey, guess what day is it today?
Leg day.
Every day is leg day.
Yeah. So, no, I think oftentimes as athletes, and this is why I asked the question, because as athletes, we don't often think that I need to do something specific for the core. Even when we go to the gym, the first thing we're going to do is we want to go and lift weights, push up on our shoulders, do some leg stuff, but we don't think of doing stuff with our core. So hopefully by the end of today's session, you will know what to do.
Yeah, I'd like to.
I want to hear some good exercises for the core then that are easy. Because we talked about this before too, just about stretching. That doesn't necessarily be... Hey, we don't have to stretch just before we run, but as long as we have a stretching routine, I started it, not, but, you know, just that kind of stuff. I know I should, but
right,
I'm just
right.
Lazy. Yeah.
I do want to go back 1 second to your explanation you gave of the core, because I thought it was really good and I don't want that to be missed because it opened my eyes. The way that you just said it actually did open my eyes. And I am one of those that really, I mean, I'm with Mitch. I know all the stuff I probably should be doing. And I do more of it than Mitch does. I'll tell you that. Let's talk about that again.
More.
When you say the core muscles, you're talking about things that are coming off from
your spine, right?
Spine.
So everything that's centrally located, think of your spine. Where does it start? Just below your skull. ends all the way down at your tailbone.
Front and back. So, right? So anything coming off your chest would be a core.
So if you're looking at your spine, that's central. Off your spine, that's where you get your ribs, right?
Yep.
And then off those ribs hangs other muscles and groups. And between, just underneath the ribs is your lungs and your heart. And just below that is your diaphragm. Below that is your abdomen. Your abdomen is then encased in another group of muscles. So oftentimes when we think about core, we think it's just the abdomen and then the low back, because it's the opposite muscle groups.
Yeah.
But it starts right all the way up from just below your skull.
You know, that would have been my honest answer too. It was always like, oh, I should be doing some sit-ups or something like that. And that's not it. That's not everything.
And the reason I ask that is because it completely changes my thought process on the exercises I should probably be doing to strengthen those core muscles. Because I instantly thought, like a CrossFit workout of some kind that is maybe, and I'm not saying CrossFit is this way. I should say exercises sometimes that, like you said, we go to the gym and we do curls or whatever that more or less makes you look good, but not necessarily strengthens the core, right?
Right. Or jumping jacks, for example. It seems like a whole body exercise, right? But I'm talking, and today we're talking about engaging specifically the core, the central component of your muscle groups.
Now, this is good.
Now, will we flow out and engage other muscle groups in your arms and legs? Absolutely. But we want to really focus on understanding the core, because that is the origin of who we are. Okay. So if you look at even developmentally, embryonically, right, when we have a cell that gets fertilized and starts to split. Yeah. The first thing is the neural spine, right? The neural tissue that forms. And then you get the budding out of the head and the arms and the legs. And that takes with it neural tissue into each of those four limbs. And that is why if you do reflexology on the foot, you can stimulate organs, because the mapping of the neural system pushes out from that central. If you imagine if you withdrew all your arms and legs to a central bit, right? That's your core.
Yeah.
Right? In development, from there, limbs push out, develop, but it takes a little bit of those neural tissue from that core with. But the central component of it is your trunk and the area that we talked about on your spine. Dave, anything else that I missed on that?
No, totally. I tend to think, too, that some people miss or forget almost the upper portion, because the upper portion is stabilized and protected. Our ribs are stabilizing that area. And so we don't always think about that as being part of the core, which it is, but it's well stabilized. And sort of the lower abdominal section gets a lot more attention.
And I've learned that ribs do matter, because I've run a marathon of cracked ribs. Not a good time.
Gosh, I thought you were going to come up with some barbecue quip.
No, that's later.
Brought to you by chicken. Ribs matter. But no, so when we talk about engaging the core, why is it important for an athlete, before we go into the how, let's talk about why it's important, right? So we talk about the central spine and we want to create stabilization around that. In order for peripheral function, arms and legs, to be optimized, central stabilization is absolutely key. Because if your central muscles, your core isn't stabilized well enough, what you're going to end up happening is you're going to create a much larger amount of injury in your peripheral muscle group, because the anchor, the origin of the muscles at your core, are not doing the job they need to do.
Yeah, that makes me think about just your running form. And if you have a weak core,
right,
you're going to get lazy, and that does make sense.
Right. And if you think about even just running, if you just hold your abs tight, a little tighter, and focus on that control, how much more efficient you actually get in running. If you manage your breathing, right? Now, remember, the diaphragm is a muscle. So if you manage your breathing, how much more efficient you get as a runner.
Hmm.
So that is why today I wanted to take some time to just focus on this issue called the core. And again, how do we understand it? And how do we train our bodies to optimize the function from that core?
Quick tangent. I'm assuming this
never
is a
happens,
tangent. This. So you said the diaphragm's a muscle. I'm guessing you can then exercise that muscle, but then you can also help to develop a breathing system different from like where you're at today. Is there an inefficient way of breathing during running that you can work on to make more efficient?
Yes.
The reason I say the short answer is yes. Good. The reason I ask this is because I went out recently. I haven't been wearing my heart rate monitor because I just want to build back up and I don't want to pay attention to that too closely. And it measures on the wrist, but I never really trust that very well. But I did wear it the other day and I went, holy cow, my heart rate is actually lower than what I thought it felt like because of my breathing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I think I need to work on some breathing exercises that are just smoother for my running based on my heart rate. Cause I was like running 135 heart rate, mm-hmm. pretty easy. But I was not breathing very efficiently. I didn't feel like.
Right. And so let's just break out the two of heart rate and breathing. Right?
Yeah.
So with breathing, in terms of differentiating how breathing can help you develop, can you develop breathing to specifically help you with your sport? One of the best examples is the free divers.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So think about a free diver, and it's really out there, right? But a free diver, they don't just end up being able to ascend or descend those depths without the practice.
Yeah.
And they focus on what? Breathing, right?
It's funny because I would think they focus on holding their breath. No, the last thing they want to do is breathe, right? Oh, wait, no.
So breathing is an inhalation and an exhalation. So with free divers, they are focused on exhaling to a very controlled degree.
Oh, yeah.
So they're not just holding their breath.
Yep.
Right. So as my mom would say, don't hold your breath. Your head will explode. So
there's one
reason. I don't think my mom ever told me that.
Your mom wasn't a scientist like my mom.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I mean, she made it through the third grade with no problems.
Well, we'll have to dive into that breathing thing a little bit more later down the road, which... To me, it sounds exciting because it's something I think that, and maybe you're going to talk about this a little bit with the core that actually might help to improve it.
Yes. And so let's just get back to the core itself and the why, right? Why do we need to engage our core? We talked about creating that central stabilization so you can have better peripheral function. So for example, if I just held a grip tool and worked on my grip, but if that grip was super strong, but my forearm muscles wasn't strong enough, it doesn't matter how good my grip is. If the forearm muscles are strong, but my biceps and triceps aren't strong enough, it doesn't matter what's happening below that. So if you work backwards from that, if your central core is strong, and then each group of muscles beyond that, shoulders, arms, elbow, forearm, wrist, hand, was progressively strengthened, that's when you can optimize your training. So with athletes, we want the quick fix, right? Something that's going to be quick, something that's going to be efficient. And I'm all about that efficiency too. I don't want to be spending hours in the gym doing mindless exercises if there's a key group of exercises that I can do that will give me the best bang for the buck.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about some bang for the buck and you guys got to be staying tuned for what that's going to look like. And don't hold your breath on the breathing, but maybe we'll talk a little bit about that too.
Awesome.
Right. So from the core standpoint, Dave, is there anything else as to the why that I missed?
No.
I love working with Dave because him and I think so similarly that maybe I should have him go first next time.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm like...
Give him a chance to talk.
No, you're right on track.
Yeah, okay. Because I think we both track the same way, but it's always nice to have a second clinician in the room just to make sure.
I laugh because he's nodding to it. Like, yep.
You hit it.
You hit it.
I can try to go with something, but no, you hit it. Yeah.
I bring my own yes man. No, Dave's good for a few things, but I think he also really understands the breathing part when you look at his performance in sport, right?
Yeah.
And when you look at breathing and core engagement, if his wasn't dialed in the way it is, he wouldn't be able to perform the way he does.
Yep.
So I know, you know, Dave's the clinician, but also Dave's the athlete. But he's the athlete that actually does the core workouts because as a clinician, he understands the importance of it. Whereas Mitch, on the other hand, his legs work well.
Legs work well, yeah.
And you can also think about efficiency as like the running economy. You would think, you hear that term a lot in the running community, running economy. Like the better your running economy is, the more efficient of a runner you are. Well, your core needs to be efficient too in order for your extremities to move in smooth, controlled patterns.
Right. So as our coach used to always say, look pretty when you're running, you know?
Prance around.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Let's not even get into prancing right now.
What that makes me think about, I know I drag my left foot. So I wear off the rubber on that. And I know, especially if I'm getting tired, I start dragging that more. And it just makes me think, like, core... Seems like there's probably some exercise I could do just to be more efficient with that piece of it.
And so I'm going to give you one more example of where you will totally realize how important the core is. And that is when you're running, as you just said, and you get to a point where you start to fatigue, right? What happens to your body?
Like,
what
starts kind of slouch?
Exactly. Right. And when you slouch, you're basically closing up, number one, you're closing up your chest, right? So breathing is not going to be efficient. And then you're flexing your hip a little bit more. So then the hip, has to work a little harder to really advance that leg forward. And the muscle firing pattern gets all affected and inhibited. So efficiency, as Dave was saying, just goes out the door. So in terms of economy, in order to work efficiently, like you think of a red line on a car, right? You can red line, I think, to 6,000 RPM. But only for a certain amount of time.
Yep.
The key is to keep those revs under 1,500. And that's how you're like efficient and you can go a much longer way.
Yeah.
But in order for something to be kept consistently good for that longer distance, it needs to make sure that it's trained to do that. It's exercised to do that.
Well, everybody's seen the marathon shuffle. Like when you get, when you can, it's like dead man walking. When you see those people out there, and we've all done it too. But when you start slouching, and then it just gets harder and harder because you're not straight. And I do have a running friend that we tease all the time. The longer he runs, the more he hunches over. And he looks like Rocky when he's running. And I've actually taken him and hit him in the chest and like, you got to straighten up. You're not, you can't even, how do you breathe?
Yeah.
Because he's all hunched over.
Yeah. And so the simplest thing that you can do in running, just based on that is, if you find yourself dragging your feet, getting into that shuffle, just straighten up, take a couple of deep breaths in, right?
Because pull the shoulders
because
back.
If we're just breathing again, and I'm not going to get too far into the breathing rabbit hole here, but if you're just breathing shallow, you're basically any exhaling, inhaling through a smaller part of your lung. If you take a deeper breath in, you can get all the way to the lower lobes, get that carbon dioxide out, get more oxygen in. So there's a whole thing, science. It makes
complete sense. I mean, when I'm sitting here and you're talking about taking a deep breath and I try to take a deep breath, I can't do it sitting here like this. Naturally, I got to open up and like, it makes complete sense.
Yeah. And I have exercise-induced asthma. So for me, I have to be like, I can, even just sitting here, I can tell it's harder for me to even speak when I'm in this position, which is why I'm always like sitting up because then I actually can breathe better and I can speak more.
You actually. I mean, you would count that as a blessing that you have that, so that you can stay more.
It forces you to do things.
It forces you to be upright and like proper.
Yeah,
I'm always proper, boys. All right, so let's talk.
Comes with the accent.
Yeah, that's right. Naturally.
So let's talk a little bit more about then what can we do about this core. Do you have any other questions as to the why?
No.
Okay.
So I completely understand. So it is necessary.
So now what? In terms of exercising your core, you mentioned doing like sit-ups, right? What exercise have you done where you've thought that you've exercised your core? Okay, that's actually actually good for your core.
Well, that's what I was thinking. As we were talking, I'm like, I don't know, I golf a lot. And that's that's a ton of core.
Right. It is. But it's also in the hold time and the repetition, right?
Yeah.
And with golf, you take a swing and then there's a whole bunch of other things going on between the next swing.
I don't know. Have you seen my living room? I swing a lot.
Oh, that's true. So you're a little bit of the outlier.
But I only swing one way.
So, right. You don't switch.
Wrong podcast.
Wait a minute. So,
I think golf as an exercise, like, because you have your whole little, cage up there, that can be done repetitively and then you can truly build up your core that way.
Well, let's talk about real exercises.
But yes, so a little bit of the muscle structure, right? So that you can understand why we do different kinds of movements. So I'm going to have Dave start off with the muscle structure of the core and I'll fill in the blanks.
Yeah. So I really like to think, and I've taught my students even at Aquinas that as we've talked about the core, if you think about the abdominals, there's a key muscle in the abdominals that wraps really horizontally around your abdomen. So if you start from the middle of your abdomen and you wrap horizontally around to your spine, there's a key muscle there. We call it transverse abdominis, it's called. And that is a key muscle that we're going to focus a lot on with exercise. It's really a foundational muscle for building other exercises on top of. So did you want me to go into some exercises?
No,
or
no. Let's talk anatomy. Anatomy first.
Okay. Then I think about from the top and bottom. So if we start with the top, we've already talked about the diaphragm being the top. Then the bottom is really more the pelvic floor or the pelvis itself, and the muscles around the pelvis being the bottom portion of the core.
So to expand on what Dave's just said, when I think of the core, I think of all the muscles that are along your spine, your paraspinal muscles.
Yep.
And they run more in a vertical kind of orientation, right?
Yep.
Then you get to the front, and those run in like different groups or subsets. Then from the back, let's just finish up the back. On the back, you also have smaller muscle groups that run just from segment to segment that are same in that vertical kind of orientation. But there's also some that are in an oblique orientation. So something that's in an oblique orientation is going to create rotation.
Mm.
Something in a vertical orientation is going to create flexion and extension.
Okay.
Right? So that's essentially what you have in the back. There's more, but essentially the ones that will help. I want you guys to visualize this so when we do the exercise, it makes more sense.
Yeah.
As we wrap around the front, Dave focused on the abdomen, but there's muscles above the abdomen that we're going to start off with, which are your neck, your scalene muscles, your sternocleidomastoid muscle, that one that seems like it sticks down across from your collarbone up to your skull, right? That's important to hold your head and neck in a certain position. You got your intercostal muscles between your ribs. That is required to open up those ribs so you can breathe better. Then we've got the diaphragm, we've got the pelvic floor, but in between, you have this horizontal, you know, transverse abdominis muscle, but you also have oblique muscles that run angularly in one direction and in the other. So there's two sets of oblique muscles.
Okay.
And the major rectus abdominis muscle that runs centrally, but in a vertical orientation, anchoring the rib cage to the pelvis.
And is that like allowing us to do like that kind of a movement or?
So if you think of your.
Because you said the back, the ones in the back, they're in the oblique are allowing us to twist.
Right.
Basically.
So
right?
Muscles work in a counter kind of action, right? Yep. So for example, if my back is pulling me up into an erect or upright posture, my abs have to allow that to happen. So it's still working. It's still controlling. If my abs pull me into a flex position, the back still has to allow that amount of flexion.
Yep.
So that's why it's important to understand that nothing works. You can't just work
independently
one muscle.
Yeah.
You don't just work your transverse muscle. You don't just work your obliques. So, but the obliques will engage a little bit more when you're doing an angular movement, a rotational movement. Your rectus abdominis is going to engage more when you're coming forward into a crunch position. But the one thing when you understand these groups of muscles, they're not big, bulky muscles like you have in your biceps and your triceps and your quads and things like that. They are very small, spindular muscles, and they require time to engage. So it's based on when you contract the muscle, you're basically telling your muscle, here's what I want you to do. Here's the position I want you to hold. So that's what we call them postural muscles versus skeletal muscles. So they function a little bit differently. And so when you train them, you got to train them differently. So that being the case, anatomically, we've got this the spine, the structure of the skeletal bones, the spine, the rib cage. We've got the pelvis, and we've got the head and neck. Then we've got all the muscles that are anchored to that, that are creating all these multi-level functions. We want to make sure that we can engage them in a way in which they can support us. So from an exercise standpoint, what kind of exercises have you done outside of sit-ups where you've thought and golfing? Is there anything else that you've done where you've like, this is helping my core?
You know, I think like planks, like people do plank challenges. You know, that's one of the things. Mm-hmm. Again, they suck. But, you know, I know if you can hold a plank.
Right.
You know, and I even think like push-ups would be something that would actually help your core.
Leg lifts, scissor kicks, stuff like that.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm glad you mentioned planks, though, because that's really our first level of what we want to do. So if I have an athlete come in, and if they cannot do a plank, even if they're having shoulder pain or hip pain, shame on me for not making sure that they can do something to engage their core and just work on their knee or just work on their hip. So yes, leg kicks and scissors and moving the limbs are going to engage at some point. But if we can't just hold a position, what's the point, right?
Yeah.
So planks are absolutely the number one thing that we should focus on. But there's a way in which you do a plank. So the position matters. How long do you need to hold a plank? You know, a lot of the plank challenges go on for 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes or more. Is that necessary? Remember, we talked about efficiency of exercises. So what we recommend in our practice, this is, again, from some of the research that's been done about how long do you hold a stretch position? Do you hold it for 10 seconds? Do you hold it for 2 minutes?
Right.
And the sweet spot seems to be in that 30-second window.
Okay.
So what we do is that we have you engage your core in a plank position for 30 seconds and then relax and then repeat it 2 more times.
And on the plank, are you on the elbows or are you in the push-up position?
We start off with prone, what we call prone on elbows. So you're basically face down on your elbows, but you're keeping your head, you know, in a neutral position. So you don't want to be in a plank position with your head looking up. You should be in a neutral position. Right? You want your elbows to be directly below your shoulders. They shouldn't be out or too far forward.
Because you're engaging muscles that are not what you're trying to do here.
Exactly. You don't want the weakness of your shoulders to dictate whether your core engages correctly or not.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. Yeah.
And then when you pick your hips off the floor, you want to create this almost straight line between your neutral head position, your shoulders, all the way down to your pelvis or your butt. So it is easier if you pick your butt up a little bit into a bit of a pike. And we'll notice this with someone that doesn't have a good strong core or even drop your hips down towards the floor.
That's kind of like cheating. Like when you can,
you're really compensating. You're doing something.
So you could recognize that right away. Be like, nope.
Yeah.
You probably say it nicer though. Like, push down.
Right.
So sometimes what we'll even do is we'll put like a small ball in the small of their back. And we'll say, okay, I want you to keep this ball. Like, once they're in the ideal position, I place the ball there, and it's like, this ball should not move. So if they drop their butt, the ball's going to roll down towards it. If they pick it up, it's going to roll towards the head position. So that's how they know how to keep it right there.
Wow.
30 seconds becomes a very long time when you're trying to control all these other parameters. But if done right, this can be a game changer to a lot of our athletes.
How often, so let's say like, boom, leaving here today, I'm going to start doing planks. Yeah. What's my first, like, do 5 planks?
So great question. We'll come to the how often and everything else, but I want you to
keeps making us wait.
I know. It's always, give me answers.
Here's the thing, right? Because core is so often sort of misunderstood and people think they know what they're doing. I really want to take the time for people to really understand. Because when you say planks, and then like, Mitch is like, hey, I do planks, I'm good. I'm like,
I just know about them.
So what we do, and so there's 3 stages of planking that we recommend.
All right.
And so I'm going to explain that to our listeners and watchers. Viewers.
Yeah.
Watches,
like now. Can we say right now or wait?
So first.
Wait, there's more.
So, to answer your question though, it's 30 seconds, 3 repeats.
Okay.
Right? So we'll talk about frequency. How often should you do this?
Yeah.
But let's start off with 30 seconds, 3 repeats. But during that time, don't hold your breath. You want to control your breathing. Yeah. You don't want to do any, heavy breathing. But how do I breathe, control, manage, and feel comfortable, relaxed in that position? Anything more than 30 seconds doesn't show that much more significant change in the control, right? So that's why we do the 30 seconds. But by repeating it, it's like, can your body remember a memory pattern?
Because I'm just thinking of this going, how easy is this to do before every run?
So you shouldn't need to do this before every
How
run.
How easy is this to do
when you're not running?
When you're not running.
This is
like you're watching TV.
Yeah.
This program can be done like at any time by anyone. So yes, we're talking specifically about athletes, but it can also be done by someone that's not athletic, wants to engage their core. And
you don't need to be at the gym. You don't need special equipment.
Nope. It's something that you can do. You said don't do this on a run, like before my run.
No, it's not necessary. Why? Because the idea of the core is to train control, right? Anything we do at that point, what is the most important thing to do before a run? Dynamic flexibility.
Yeah.
You're prepping your body to do that thing. But if you have a baseline of doing core workouts, routines a couple of times a week, then you've created that baseline. But it needs to be an ongoing thing.
Yep.
So prone on elbow planks, 3 times 30 seconds. We don't just stop there. Then you also have to get onto your side and do a side plank. Same thing.
Sounds horrible.
So a side plank.
Those are rough.
Yes. Well, what we recommend for the side plank, because so many people do this incorrectly.
Yeah.
We have them lay with their back against the wall. You're on the floor, back against the wall, right? Your shoulder blades need to touch the wall. Your pelvis needs to touch the wall. And your heels need to touch the wall. Those are your 3 points. You get up on your elbow, right? Make sure your head stays back as well, because it's easy to drop your head forward. And then with those 3 points touching, shoulder blades, pelvis, heels, raise your hips off the floor so there's a straight line between your shoulders and your heels. Same thing, 3 30-second hold. And you don't cycle through 30 seconds in prone, 30 seconds on the left, 30 seconds on the right. You do 3 times 30 seconds in prone, 3 times 30 seconds in side on your right, 3 times 30 seconds side on your left. Once you can engage your core to that level, this is your base. This is your foundation. So then you want to be able to come away from the wall. Can I still hold these positions on my side? The added thing that we have is when you're up against the wall and you're in your perfect plank position, you put your hand straight up, right? And you engage that shoulder blade, opening up that chest position. If you didn't do it against the wall, you'd find what we see in the practice. People sort of roll forward, they drop their hips, they don't realize, or they pike their backs, so they don't realize that their core isn't actually straight, so they're not engaging the muscles correctly.
Or a lot of times the butt sticks back first and touches the wall and nothing else does.
Do you have padded floors for this? Like when I whack my head trying to, you know, like I'm gonna come into the practice and
we'll have padded floors for the ones that we are concerned about protecting their brain. Right. We pad the floors for them.
Yeah.
For the rest
we could video it and I could be like the bad example.
Can you bring a helmet?
I was just thinking, you just take 2 pillows and we'll just duct tape it to your head.
but we joke about that. But you're not just going to fall. You're going to have some control. Because if you cannot do a prone on elbows, we will not have you do the side plank.
Okay.
Right? Yep. So you have to be able to master the prone on elbows. So the first thing I'll have my patients do, get in your elbows. If they do it for 10 seconds, great. Control it. Increase it to 15. Until you get to 30. Then can you do 30 seconds 3 times? Yeah. Until you can do 3 times, then let's try the side plank. And for the side plank, they may be able to do 5 seconds. I can't do anymore. Yeah. You build up to 30. Until you can do 3 sets of 30 on each side, you don't progress beyond that.
Yep. So far we're 4.5 minutes in.
Yeah.
Like with 30, 60, 90 times three, we're 4.5 minutes.
Right.
That's it.
Right. So given that you're going to have some rest time in between each of those 30 seconds as well, you're looking at about a 6 minute just doing your regular prank.
There's still almost nothing in a day.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's a variation of this that we add for people that are like, my core is excellent. I can nail these things without, you know, batting an eye. Yeah. So then what we try to do is engage the core, but move your limbs out of position. So for example, if you're prone on your elbow, can you do a 30 second or 15 second where you raise one leg off the floor? So now you're on 3 points, right? And hold that for 15 seconds without piking your butt.
Yeah.
Right. And then do 15 seconds on the other limb. And then relax. And then can you repeat that 3 times?
Okay.
On your side, can you lay on your side, get into your proper plank position with your arm out? Can you raise the top leg up about 20 degrees and hold that for 15 seconds? Can you repeat that 3 times? Can you do it on the other side? When you start getting to that level of engagement, this is back to what you were just talking about with, you know, we'll do some leg lifts, you know, how do I engage my core, right? Well, right now, you're now adding in those components.
Yeah.
But only when the previous component is built up adequately so you can do this.
Yeah.
So then when you can hold those positions, raise those limbs, be on less, basically, a less stable platform, then we take it one step further for the next phase where if you're in prone on elbows, you'll raise your leg up towards the ceiling a little bit. So basically, we're not talking about you like really swinging that back into extension, but just up
a little,
up enough so you're just on three-point position. But then we have you move your leg away from the center line.
Oh.
So away from the center line, you'll get into a lot more unstable position because the weight of the leg is going to want to throw you off. Now, can you engage? Now you see where those oblique muscles, that's why I wanted to explain that.
Yeah.
But now your oblique muscles have to engage to keep your pelvis from twisting, from dropping that hip. So keep the hips level, lift your leg up. Can you maintain pelvis level? If you move your leg out, can you maintain pelvis level? So it's so important to understand the basics of that kind of core drill because the control is what matters. Doing it right is what matters. And way too often, you know, our athletes are just going through what they think they know without really understanding how they should be engaging and what exactly can give them the best bang for the buck.
So, let's say I'm somebody who's never done any core training before like this, and I can do one plank for 30 seconds and that's it. Or let's say I can't. Let's say I can only do 15 seconds. Obviously, that means there's some growth to be had there, which will inevitably help my overall fitness, overall running, I'm guessing, right? So I'm trying to get to, like, how much is this going to help me? I get myself to where I can do these 90 seconds times three, these three things. What am I going to feel? How am I going to feel? How's that going to benefit me on the run? I'm guessing there's a lot that I'm going to feel differently on the run.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, some of the things that you'd feel is that you're not slouching as soon into your runs. You know, normally you'll get to that mile 15, 16, where it's like, oh my gosh, you know, and you're a lot more sprightly because your body is able to control its position that much better. If your body's position is better, your posture is more upright, your hips are working better, your arms are swinging better. Mm-hmm. And so you really decompress a lot of those skeletal muscles from doing the job of both skeletal and postural.
I'm just thinking, like,
to a certain extent, you have to have something to measure from too.
Yeah.
So if you sort of recognize that consistently at mile 13 or 14 or 15, that's when your technique breaks down or something breaks down to make you less efficient, then that can be your benchmark to
good point.
Add in the core.
And you'll also notice it in your finish times. Your finish times will improve.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to, how simple this, okay, I understand we're still at the base phase, you know, still we haven't progressed very far yet, but how simple of a process this is to really see and feel improvements in your run.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, no.
It's exciting.
I've adopted these principles myself. We've tried and tested these things to make sure that it not just makes sense on paper, but it needs to make sense in the physical world.
Yeah,
like I said, I am not a patient person when it comes to, like, I just want to get out and run.
Yeah,
I don't have time to do all of these things. But I understand that if I did these on the off days and prepped my body well enough, then when my body is ready to do that thing, it can just do it a lot more efficiently.
Yeah.
And I can also say that when I haven't done them, because, you know, at a certain point, we get busy with other things, you skip your workouts, but you still want to run, those runs don't feel as efficient.
100%.
Now, take me up on that. If it's anecdotal to me, great. But I think you're going to find there's going to be a change, a noticeable change over time that you're going to be going, wow, why didn't I know this sooner?
Yeah.
But wait, there's more.
Well, and the thing is, why didn't I know this sooner? But why didn't I know it was this simple?
Yes.
Like I said, I say 4.5 minutes, but even if it is 6 or 7, that is nothing to get at least some core exercise training happening that you will feel and see in your
In your workouts, in your routines, and in your performance. So this is why, when it came to PT Sports Pro, we didn't want to just call it a physical therapy practice because we understand the human body needs more than just physical therapy. We don't want to wait for someone to be injured before they see us. We want to keep them from being injured.
Yeah.
So the way we can do that is with the other components, that, as Dave said, of testing, right? How do we understand what your performance really is? And then of personal training, right? How do we help the body to not get injured?
Yeah.
And then physical therapy, how do we help the body when it gets injured? So we'll be happy to create these, you know, one-on-one consult sessions for anyone that's like, you know what, it's too much. I need someone to show this to me. We'll absolutely have that option at PT Sports Pro when we open soon.
Very soon.
So there's two more big components to core control that I want to cover. And then I want to give Dave a chance to weigh in on some of the other stuff.
Yep.
And so the other, so once you've got your plank drills down, and let's say you don't have to get to stage three, which is, you know, stage one is everything neutral. Stage two, you're lifting up a limb. Stage three, you're lifting up and out.
Yep.
Right? So you don't have to get to stage three, but you should at least be comfortable at stage one before you add these other two components. Okay. So the second component of core is, if you look at plank drills, it's a static kind of position, right? You get into a position, you hold, you stay. We add a dynamic routine to core as well. So for those of you familiar with yoga, we start off with, there's three positions that we cycle through. The first one is the down dog. So you get your feet out behind you, your heels as close to the ground as possible, your arms outstretched in front of you, you tuck your head in so it's in between your arms,
yep.
You pike your body up.
Yep.
Can you hold that position for at least 3 seconds?
Mm.
From there, we transition into a chaturanga position, but a chaturanga with your elbows at your side, not out here.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hold that? So it's almost like a low plank position.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
And then
yep.
The third position is to push up into an up dog.
Oh, okay.
Right? To get that spinal extension that we're talking about. Again, this is why the anatomy lesson was so important, right?
Yeah.
Because all of these components really now start to make sense because each bit builds on the previous bit.
Okay.
So think of the downward dog again.
Yeah.
The chaturanga and then the up dog. We try to do this without you needing to move your hands and your feet.
Mm.
So basically, if you're looking at a downward dog position, you're on your toes and your heels are getting close to the ground.
Yeah.
When you get into the chaturanga, you're still on your toes, right?
Mm.
So when you get into the up dog position, most people will point their feet down and back.
Yeah.
We want you to stay on your toes.
Whoa.
Yeah. So you're really getting this progressive stretch, you know, through your Achilles, through your foot, your plantar fascia, and it's engaging all of those muscles in a dynamic way.
I would have to do it to see how you can even do that. That seems so counter to like, I'm not a yoga specialist by any means, but I have done a little bit with my wife. She does it a lot. And I never saw an upward facing dog where your feet were like flat or,
Right. Which is why we're not, this is not your traditional yoga position.
It's more of an engagement of muscles. Yeah,
it's a very specialized modification of the yoga positions, but we use the terminology because most people recognize 100%. A down dog, a chaturanga and an up dog.
Yep. Gotcha.
But I've seen so many versions of that, that, you know, as much as we're explaining this to the listeners and viewers, really to do this right, come and see us. We can help you to really nail down this thing so you get the maximum, you know, efficiency out of it.
Yep.
So the 3 seconds in each position, 3 cycles is your initial goal. Your end goal is 10 seconds in each position, 10 cycles.
Oh, wow.
That is not easy.
Yeah, exactly. So you can imagine all that pressure going through your hand, your wrist, your shoulders. Now you're engaging all those muscles. Now imagine if you just jumped into that without having done a plank.
Yeah, no.
That's why the plank as your first level is so important because it builds the control. It builds the flexibility. It progresses the stretches so that you can go into these other positions. Now, if you have some physical issues that keeps you from extending your wrist a certain way, you can do a punch grip. There's some modifications that you can make.
Yeah.
But the key is making sure you are able to, like, if you're doing a downward dog, you don't want your head cocked back. You want your head down. You know, there's certain key things that you need to do to control that position to maximize the core, to maximize the whole postural muscle group. So the third thing that we would then recommend is a good ab crunch program. So we don't call it a sit-up program because we're not sitting up. When you do a full sit-up, you're engaging more of your hip flexors. But when you do a crunch, you are basically controlling this area between your diaphragm and your pelvis, right? So the first crunch is what we call a neutral crunch. So you lay on your back, your knees are bent up, right? And then you can either lay flat on the ground or if you need a little pillow, you do that. I like laying flat because it really allows me to extend my thoracic spine up here so I'm not crunched forward. I keep my hands crossed across my chest. And the idea is that I start off by rolling my pelvis backwards so it flattens my back, my spine, down into the floor. So that creates a more of a neutral spine. And while I'm holding that position, I'm going to come up into a crunch until I get to what we call the quiver point.
Mm.
The quiver point is different for different people, right?
Yeah.
So if you are not used to this drill, you'll get, you know, an inch of the ground and you're quivering already. Don't keep going. Hold it there. Train the muscle how to hold that position.
Huh.
So because we talked about the difference between postural muscles and skeletal muscles, and the postural muscle needs time to engage, to understand how to develop that memory pattern, for these ones, we'll do a 10-second hold and 10 repeats. So because that's too simple for most of our athletes like Mitch, we add this third component where...
You got that one in the bag?
Yeah, I got it.
So you come up.
Show us.
You come up to your quiver point, but when you go back down, you don't go all the way down. You keep about an inch between your head and the floor. So you're constantly engaging, and you repeat that 10 times. On the 10th one, after you hold it for 10 seconds, you'll do 10 mini crunches. And then your set is done. So starting again from scratch, you're laying on your back. You bring your feet up. You flatten your back against the floor. So you've maintained some neutral spine. Hands across your chest. You pick up and you engage. The engagement isn't through your head. It's through your upper body. Right?
Yeah.
So you're engaging this muscle. And you come into that crunch and you hold it for 10 seconds. You release, but not all the way back.
Yep.
10 second hold. 10 repeats. On the 10th repeat, 10 mini crunches. And then you're done with that one component of the crunch. The other two components is a diagonal, same thing.
Oh, okay.
To one side,
yep.
To do all of them, and then a diagonal to the other side. That's now one cycle.
Yeah.
And then you can do 2 to 3 cycles of that.
Wow.
So in this picture of engaging the core, what we recommend for every athlete as your goal to get to where, once you get this done, if you do this twice a week, you're going to get the best bang for your buck.
Oh, wow.
Is you start off with your planks to that phase 3 advanced position. In that same session, you do your yoga or your chaturanga, down dog, up dog positions, and then you finish with these abdominal crunches.
Okay.
And that's your routine. And that routine is about a 20-minute routine, 20 to 25-minute routine, which is why you use it as part of a workout. You don't use this as, I'm going to do this really quick before I do that. And,
yeah.
And that's the other reason why you don't do this just before you go to run.
Yeah,
so that's why,
totally.
You know, when you were asking me those questions, I'm going to get to a point where when I'm done, you'll be saying, wow, I have no more questions, but I'm sure you do. So when we talk about engaging the core, we understand why it's important. We understand how it's important, not just from a general postural kind of thing, but also from a performance standpoint. But we also understand that there need to be specific things that you need to do in order to engage. We also understand that athletes don't want to take the time willy-nilly just doing random stuff.
Yeah.
So if we have a way to train, like we say with running, nothing improves running than running, right?
Yeah.
So nothing improves the core than engaging it.
Yeah.
So let's engage it in a way that is meaningful, that's effective, that you will feel this workout for sure.
Yeah.
But you will see, again, you know, the value of doing it. So those are the three things that we want to really emphasize. But there are other core exercises that people want to do, and we're not against them doing it. We just say, listen, if you crunch for time, see what I did there?
Yeah.
Do these crunches, do these drills, and that's going to give you the best bang for the buck.
Right, exactly. So
now we got questions.
No, I think it's, I'm looking forward to trying it, you know, and... It's not that you, let's say for me tomorrow, I'm going to go out and do a run. Now, if I'm just starting out, I can go ahead and throw in those planks and whatever before, right? Or after or whatever, right? It's not like it's going to hurt me.
There is no harm. It's just added time, right?
But eventually it's going to get to a stage where I'm like, no, this needs to be its own work on a separate day or whatever. It's,
exactly.
But yeah.
So, but I want to make sure that the core drills that we're talking about is not the starter course.
Yeah.
It's the entree. It's the main course.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of focus you want to dedicate on doing these things. Because often it is a starter. It's like I'm doing this so I can just get to going to do that.
Yeah.
So if you need to break it out, break it out. But if you say, I just want to start off with just doing planks every day, and today just happens to be, I'm ready for a run, I'll start off with some planks and then run. Absolutely, do that.
Well, yeah.
It's different because I run in the morning and then I get home from work. For you, you kind of are all at once.
Like I'm all over though. Yeah. It might be 7 o'clock one day. It might be noon one day. It might be wherever I can fit it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very different. But the other thing I will add as well is there can be some detriment to doing this after you just run because your muscles are already expended.
Yeah, I bet.
And so if I really want to keep this as an entree kind of, you know, workout, then you don't want to be so fatigued that you can't focus on controlling these muscle groups.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
Kind of a perfect practice makes perfect type thing where you need the right technique or it's no bother of even doing it.
Yeah. True.
Definitely a peeve of mine when people say, oh, practice makes perfect, right?
They're like, nobody's perfect.
Perfect practice makes perfect. Yeah. Practice is just practice. You can do something the wrong way for a lot of reasons and you don't get the result.
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, I'm just looking forward to the core one, the first three, the stage one, I guess it would be, and just doing that on a day, you know, like today, I like throwing it in tonight, just working on just doing those first three, which is pretty quick and easy to do
and
started on a cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wouldn't want people to get overwhelmed at all because really you are starting slow. You're starting at a fairly minimal time commitment. So don't let it overwhelm you. Because you got to start somewhere. And so you start with that starting point, and then when you're able to fit it in logistically to your schedule, then you can find, I can add just bits more.
I think that's the, you know, like culturally Americans in general, more is better. So it gets overwhelming to think like, oh, I got to do all of that.
Right.
It's like,
no,
you really only have to do 3 planks. For 30 seconds. Right. That's really all you have to do.
Yes. To get started,
To get started.
Do them and doing them correctly.
Right. Yeah. Do that first.
Yeah.
And then you're going to find time and you're going to be like, oh, okay, now I can do this.
Yeah.
Right. And this is, again, why the emphasis on understanding the skeletal system and the muscle structure. Because when you understand the why, you're more likely to do it correctly. If someone just says, oh, do that, and you're like, okay, I'm going to just do that. But, you know, and you didn't get the reason why, it's not going to make much sense.
Yeah.
There's an amazing amount of variation that you see when, even if you, sometimes you'll show someone the activity and it won't get done quite right. You need to have someone there to either give little touch cues, tactile cues, or visual or whatever it needs to.
Well, I was going
to
say, help. I bet, have you ever videoed somebody and then showed them and they went, what? That's what I'm trying, that's what I was doing?
We, actually, it's funny that you say that. We do that quite a lot in the practice.
Yeah.
We don't save those videos. But a lot of times we can see everything that's going on. I mean, like we do a run gate analysis and it's funny because people are like, oh yeah, I'm a midfoot runner, and then we videotape him like, well, actually you're not. You're a heel striker. And look how you hyperextend your knees every time you do that heel strike.
Yeah.
So the video, yes, that's important. Having the exercise, like we actually have an exercise handout that has all of these things listed in there.
Is that on the website?
Not yet, but it will be. There are some core things that we will be adding to the website as we grow. And once we open, I would invite people to swing by and say, hey, I'd like to just have a copy of that.
Nice.
You know, we'd be happy to share. And for me, this is not, there's no secret sauce here. We are trying to help our athletes be the best versions of themselves. And so what if I don't make money out of doing that? No, the reward I get is far greater. So I love these kind of, that's why I love doing these podcasts. So we can spend the time diving into things that an athlete may have a question about. And this is maybe that thing that says, you know what? Maybe I want to see these guys. Maybe I want to get that one-on-one to help me be a better version of myself. Yeah. We're happy to do that.
Yeah. That kind of leads us into the next segment, the one-on-one, where we're going to talk about... It's on my phone. It's on my phone. I guess we weren't. We were going to go into a specialist and nutritionist. Or no, that was four.
No, we're. I think we're good.
That's right.
With this topic.
This was the end. That's right. Well, Terrence sent me like a bunch and we were only going through three. But I thought we were going into this next one. We're not.
Yeah.
No, this is good.
Part of building the anticipation.
That's right. Yeah. Anything.
There's more. There's more.
Well, there's a lot more. Yeah. Anything else on the core, the exercises, things like that you guys just want to touch on?
I think. Dave, is there anything else that you would want the athletes to know at this point?
Really, I'd just say, you know, try to, you know, do whatever you can to fit it into the schedule that you have. Like I say, getting started and getting in a routine is, mm-hmm. is really almost like it's the hardest part.
Right.
I would say yeah. when getting that routine, I struggle with yeah. it myself for sure. Once you get in the routine, you'd be surprised at how efficient you even become with your time. And you're mm-hmm. able to actually like dedicate that time right. And get everything you need out of the exercise. Yeah.
And as with anything that we do as athletes, if you don't put it on the plan, it becomes an afterthought.
Yeah.
Right. So put it yeah. on the plan. And actually I was going to bounce that question that you just asked back to you guys. Like, what else would you want to hear about in terms of core and engagement? Did we cover it adequately? Does this give you enough to go on right now?
I think so for me. I mean, I know it's simple enough. It's just getting right. off
well,
my butt.
Well, let me ask you this. 100% to get started. And I'm excited to get this on my daily get out of bed and knock this thing out in the first 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Whatever, get up, just do a little bit of just making sure I'm not literally rolling into a plank. But I mean, because that's a great time. Right. Okay, I'm not running today. Knock out these few planks and right. start there. If I only have time for three planks, move on. And right. that's still better than nothing, right?
Yes, it
is. And doing it correctly.
Yes. Well, yeah, yes. yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yes, it is. But I would still recommend that you identify at least twice a week where I'm going to work on my core, right?
Well, no,
so
you have that. Yeah.
So even if you're just starting off and you go, okay, I want to maybe do something every day. Great. But on these 2 days is I'm going to focus to this routine as far as I can.
Yeah, 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 totally. Yeah. And that's what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm just saying if life gets in the way, I'm still going to make sure I get in some of that core training.
For sure.
Is this though the entry into other exercises that are
yeah.
more, way more like, I don't know, weight bearing or whatever.
Absolutely.
Or things like that. So, you can definitely take this to another level.
Yeah.
Well, sure. Totally. As a matter of fact, that's why I introduced it the way I did, because we talked about the central control. But we know that peripheral control is dependent on central control. So if we nail down the central control, then we will take one of these episodes to talk about what could you do now from a peripheral control, you know, standpoint. Mm. And what that means is you go to the gym. Are there some key exercises that you could do that will maximize your time efficiently and effectively? So we've got upper body workouts. We've got lower body workouts. We will talk about that. But I just want to blur it in with this. I wanted yeah. this to really just be about the core.
Well, no, I meant
yeah. so,
for the core.
Yeah. No, for the okay. core. No, this is it. So for,
okay.
yes, where we say there's 25 ways to, you know, do things.
Yep.
But if you had to pick it down to what would be the most efficient, this would be it.
Okay.
So what you're awesome. Going to find out, what you're going to see with PT Sports Pro is that we believe in consistency. Because when you do something consistently, you can pick out the outliers. You can pick out where the issues are. You can pick out where the weaknesses are. And then you can build in that. What's nice about a program like this is you're going to be feeling it. Right? So you'll know when you've done mm-hmm. enough or you haven't done enough. You'll mm-hmm. quiver more. You'll quiver less.
Yeah.
So it really is a great program. It's tried and tested. I mean, we've been preaching this for at least 15 years to our patients, our clients that have come through our practices in the past, and we will continue to do this just because you know, not only do we believe in it, it is that effective.
Okay, awesome, yeah. awesome.
So on that note, we've engaged this core as down to the core as we could. Hopefully you guys got a special anatomy lesson from all of that and got to hear Dave speak a little bit.
I'm here.
And Mitch smile and wave.
Hi, I'm here, guys.
Yeah, but yeah, this has been another episode of You Don't Know What You Don't Know. And so PT Sports Pro is glad to put you in the know when it comes to treating you like a pro.
I got nothing for that.
I
still can't believe you asked those questions. I still can't believe
you. Planks and crunches.
Yeah. I still can't believe you paused.
Yeah.
With me?
No.
Oh.
I'm teasing them. Yeah, and until next time, do work on your core. That's what I'm saying.